From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of April 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. It's Earth Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Scott Irwin will join us to discuss a Farm Doc Daily article he's written about how fast farmers can put a corn crop in the ground in the United States. Guess what? It's about the same length of time today as it was 40 years ago. He'll explain why. And then a bit later in the program, we'll check in with cash grain specialist at the Andersons and also take a look at the weather forecast. Mark Russo will be here from Risk Pulse on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He is at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day. Hey, Kurt, it's a beautiful day. Thanks for being with us.
Well, you're welcome, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, farmers I know are anxious to get into the field. Some of them probably scratching around in the earth by this time, though I suspect most are finding that they'll have to wait some time. When you talk to them today, how long do they think it will be?
Well, it depends where you're at. Here in the Eastern Belt, you know, there's ideas maybe late this week in some areas. Talking to guys in the Western Belt, they're going in some areas, so it varies a lot. The forecast has a split system coming across, which means we're going to see some moisture stay to the north and to the south of us. So it looks like you take Kansas through Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and portions of Ohio. We're going to be dry here for a few days to give us the ability to maybe get a little work accomplished. When you look at the planting progress, we're expected to be about 7% complete as a nation. Last week we were 3%, average is about 12%. So next week we ought to bump up just a little bit. But, you know, we can plant a lot in a hurry, but we got to get everybody going. And it's going to take a little while yet. So we'll continue to watch the forecast as next week continues to be somewhat wet.
Beyond the weather, what are the other fundamentals you're watching at this time?
Well, it seems like, though saying Oates knows, it seems like the commodity funds know. I don't know if they have an inside track, but it kind of looks, you know, I don't want to say suspicious, but back in this winter when the USDA was shut down, they sort of had a neutral position. But once the USDA reopened up, they pressed the short side, and it seems like the news is bearish, kind of working for them here. So evidently, there might be some more bearish news coming at us here in the short time. The funds have established a record short position of over 300,000 contracts being short in the corn. They're short 95,000 contracts of beans and about 63,000 contracts of wheat. So the open interest continues to go up in this down and through here. So one of these days, hopefully, they'll want to cover those positions. The other flip side of it, though, is the commercial, which very unheard of, is kind of a net long position now, indicating that maybe they sold some basis in here and along the board as a hedge. So we'll see how that unfolds. But the trade continues to listen or watch for some more U.S.-Chinese news. There's supposed to be some more meetings scheduled through here. So hopefully we'll have some clear-cut news there to help that. The shipments were fairly decent today. We shipped out 1.3 million metric tons of corn. That was above trade expectations, over 811,000 tons of wheat, and that was a better than expected. Soybean shipments were disappointing at 382,000 tons. We'll see if we'll see some more sales take place. There is talk that China might have bought up to 1.5 million metric tons of beans out of the southern hemisphere. The other thing to kind of keep an eye on, the trade's still very concerned about African swine fever. It is now in every province of China. There's reports it might be in Japan. And the trade is concerned that we're seeing feed demand destruction around just the fact that we're losing our livestock numbers around the world.
And that was evidenced by the purchases that China has recently made. Any indication that they'll continue to buy, at least from the United States, at this point?
I think we're going to continue to see them on a weekly basis, see anywhere from 23 to 30,000 metric tons of pork in general, but they're shopping worldwide. There's ideas, there's being deals cut with South America to ramp up some overall protein production in those regions in through there. So I think they're going to continue to be looking around the world. It's not U.S., but you know, Canada and Europe, anywhere they can find some protein source.
Anything else that we need to watch out for at this time? I was wondering maybe about the livestock in particular. We've started with the hogs, but maybe we can finish up with the cattle. There were an awful lot of those calves that maybe did not make it through the flooding and the snowstorms out west. What do we know about that situation?
Yeah, not only out west, but visiting you know, guys here in the eastern belt, there was quite a bit of loss. Now, this is going to be a long-term marketing hole. We're talking over a year from now. But, you know, it's a concern when the cattle inventory reports start to come out. Those are going to be closely monitored. But overall, we've got more placed. Part of that was, too, we were unable to move cattle out of the feedlot and move new ones in due to the weather. But we're going to have ample supplies. Pork supply still remains strong. We priced a lot of this Chinese news in. We're overbought, and we're ready for some type of price correction. The main thing, if you're a non-agriculture person listening to this program, I encourage you to go to the store, get your pork loin. These pork loins are still good buys, and I think they're going to be worth putting in the freezer for this summer, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, after nearly 8 years of litigation, the Argus Leader newspaper's quest to obtain SNAP retail sales data lands in the Supreme Court today for oral arguments. The court will ultimately decide what constitutes confidential business information as it relates to public access to government records. Retailers have argued that store-level SNAP sales data essentially amounts to a trade secret, and releasing it would harm retailers. The Argus Leader, a newspaper in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, has argued the public has a right to know how and where taxpayer dollars are being spent in the $65 billion program. Well, a growing coalition of lawmakers is looking to overhaul Chapter 12 bankruptcy rules as farmers and ranchers continue to face economic challenges, including trade tension and low-level incomes. House Agriculture Chairman Colin Peterson, Democrat from Minnesota, is supporting a new bipartisan bill from freshman Antonio Delgado, he's a Democrat out of New York, that would raise the amount of farm debt covered under Chapter 12 bankruptcies to $10 million, effectively making the option available to more farmers. Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, a Republican, of course, is pushing similar legislation with bipartisan backing in the Senate. Farmers currently must have less than $4.15 million in debt to qualify for Chapter 12 bankruptcy, per the Congressional Research Service. The debt threshold, which was set back in the 1980s, does not reflect the growth in average farm size or the rise in farmland values, according to proponents of the measure. The American Farm Bureau Federation, AFBF, and the National Farmers Union, NFU, the largest general farm groups in the U.S., are both on board with the proposal. Well, new data from the Commerce Department shows how hard U.S. soybean exports have been slammed by retaliatory tariffs. In the first 6 months of the current marketing year, which began in September, soybean exports to China were about $8.4 billion, or 86% lower than over the same period in the previous marketing year. By the numbers, total U.S. exports, soybeans, were down 36% over the same period compared to the previous marketing year, even as soy sales to other countries have increased. Exports to the EU have more than doubled, for example. And finally today, Iowa Republicans Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, both senators, joined two other senators in holding a hearing in Glenwood, Iowa, about the Army Corps of Engineers' response to the Midwest flooding this spring. The Corps was questioned at length about what can be done to prevent or at least lessen the impact of future flooding. Grassley says the Army Corps might not be focusing on the right priorities, as demonstrated by an ongoing lawsuit against the Corps.
There's a recent court case that said that the Corps is giving too much attention to endangered species, and that's interfering with flood control. And I guess I feel that flood control is the main purpose and should be the only purpose of the core on the river. I think that's why those flood control dams were put in place.
Witnesses at the hearing detailed the impact of this year's flooding on their homes and businesses. Several witnesses testified that the Corps should have made significant changes to its manual after flooding in 2011, but neither the Corps itself or Congress could take action to make it happen. Grassley says Corps officials at the hearing said flood control has been and will continue to be its number one priority. Grassley says flood prevention should be its top priority instead of just reacting when floods are happening.
My thoughts on the hearing would probably sum up. The Corps yesterday told us that flood control was always their number one priority. Kind of feel like it's their only number one priority when there's flooding, and we need to get back to basics.
Ernst says the trend of flood and rebuild, must end. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Last week, Scott Irwin, agricultural economist, wrote an article for the FarmDoc Daily website about how fast the corn crop can be planted in the United States. He dropped down to my studio, and I asked him just exactly how fast that could happen and if we can really plant faster today than we used to.
My answer would be no. Maybe a little bit, Todd. But there's a real fallacy in this is a situation where your eyes can deceive you. So you drive out in the countryside or you have a friend that's a farmer and they have a big planter and they can plant their individual farm in these particular cases clearly much faster than they used to. I don't disagree with that individual anecdotal observation. The problem is that doesn't necessarily add up to the whole. And so that's what we've done in this research is to say, okay, let's look at the data on planting progress and in a rigorous way determine how fast have we been planting the U.S. corn belt and the U.S. corn crop, and does it match the conventional wisdom? The answer is no.
So how fast can we plant it?
Well, boiling it all down, it's a near constant. I mean, there's some variation from year to year, but on average, it looks like it takes a minimum of 14 good field days to get the U.S. Corn Belt planted, basically with everyone able to and willing to run flat out. So it probably takes some more days than that because, it's hard to imagine that we can literally run flat out at our maximum rate for 14 consecutive days. But that's a good starting point, 2 weeks.
That happened 40 years ago, and it happened in 2018.
That's right. If there was ever a circumstance, Todd, where we needed to draw on that excess capacity to plant fast, it was last year. You know, we arrived at April 25th in Illinois with little to no planting done, and that's exactly the circumstances where you would think that we would have planted as absolutely fast as we could. And the data show that in aggregate, we planted about the same number of acres, for example, in Illinois, around 1 million acres, in 2018 per suitable field day as we did in 1980.
Amazing.
It really is, and it's one of those things that's really hard for people to grasp what they see in the fields with these really big planters and why aren't we actually in total planting so much faster than we did 40 years ago. And it literally comes down to this little truism, which is today we have fewer bigger planters that plant in total per day about the same as more smaller planters 40 years ago.
That's Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. You can learn more from him online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. We're now joined by Greg Johnson of the Andersons to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace. Greg, I know that the commodity funds are short these markets. That's kind of unusual at this time of year. Do we have any good reasons why?
We may. There's been some years where the funds do establish a short position and stay short all the way through the growing season. It seems unlikely that they would be able to do that this year, but if we don't have any weather problems, I suppose you could argue that this could be one of those years. So it's a little too early to say for sure, but as of today, the funds continue to be comfortable being short corn, and the farmers are holding old crop corn, and so it's a standoff at this point, but the funds seem to be a little bit bigger than the farmers, and so the shorts are beating the longs today.
So I have a different question, because most of the folks that I talked to have been surprised that the funds have stayed short for this long. Is that just based on timing of the year?
Well, I think part of it is a lot of the funds are these algorithmic traders that trade off of government reports. And if you look at the government reports, a very comfortable carryout. We've had 6 good crops in a row. So if you assume that we're going to get this corn planted and the beans planted in a timely fashion, and we just throw an average yield on top of the acres that the government says we're going to plant, we're still going to have plenty of corn and beans left over at the end of this next marketing year. So there's just really no reason for the funds, if they really believe that we're going to grow an average crop, to do anything but stay short. So I think that's probably why they've stayed as short as they have, and probably will continue to until something changes.
And I suppose it doesn't help that South America has had a good soybean crop and are looking at a really pretty good corn crop too.
Exactly. I think it was their third biggest bean crop ever. It wasn't a record crop, but just due to the sheer number of acres they planted, it's going to turn out to be the third biggest crop. And as you said, the corn crop, the double crop corn, is off to a good start. So haven't harvested anything yet, but they're off to a good start. And so no good news out of South America today.
Anything on the demand side we should be watching?
Well, with farmers ramping up to get into the field, typically this time of year we see farm movement slow down. So basis levels should continue to improve as the processors and the exporters need to continue to get corn to move through the pipeline, and farmers don't want to sell. So we'll probably see the nearby basis continue to improve on both corn and soybeans.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn today is $3.40. New corn is $3.52. Cash beans are $8.45, new beans $8.50, and new wheat is $4.22.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Thanks, Mark. Hope you had a good Easter weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. It was a wonderful weekend here.
Let's talk about some of the weather that is in the offing. Things dried out yesterday. Looked really good today so far. And what I can see is that there might be some open weather for producers to get fields dried out. I don't know how quickly they'll get into the field, but soon enough if we can keep it up. What do you see?
Yeah, certainly the pattern from now into the early part of May, it looks like a kind of a typical mid-spring type of pattern, a rainfall pattern, and by way of there's some rain systems coming through, and they'll come through at different intervals and will be kind of variable in terms of coverage and totals. So we're not seeing anything that's exceptionally wet from a pattern perspective, but on the other hand, we're not seeing anything that's exceptionally dry that features, you know, belt-wide dry conditions. Overall, over the next couple of weeks, it looks like this week is the most favorable week across the Midwest, and already that's on top of the southwestern Midwest. For west southwest Illinois through Missouri, southern much of the southern half of Iowa, even extending down into Kansas, that's been a zone that has missed out on the significant precip totals of late. And so combining that with, generally light precip and infrequent precip here this week, that should allow for some pretty good field work and planting as we go through this week.
And after we get this week done, what do you see?
Yeah, for next week's rain opportunity, again, it doesn't look like overly wet or an excessively wet pattern, but as it looks right now, it does look like portions of the central and northern Corn Belt would be the area a bit more favored from a rainfall total standpoint, but again, it doesn't look overly problematic. I guess from just a overall macro point of view, certainly, it looks variable. You have some areas that are seeing much better conditions for planting, but then other areas that will continue to have delays. And that's really the theme going into early May.
There will be importance placed upon a little heat and some wind to get things dried out so that equipment can move. Does that all come along with this drier air that will be seen?
We're definitely not seeing anything unseasonably cold here coming up. Temperatures here in the Corn Belt will be variable on a day-to-day basis, but averaging out to be near normal with time. And so I guess compared to last week, the outlook's a little bit cooler, but again, no sign of any turn to a longer duration, you know, unseasonably cold pattern, which again is different from a year ago, where the last or the second half of April was unseasonably to even record cold. Definitely not going that route this year, and actually, you know, going in some areas of the southern U.S. actually the opposite way into a warmer than normal pattern.
Hey, thanks so much. I do appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Look us up. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. WillAg.org, Spotify, iTunes, the Google Play Store, NPR One, Stitcher, SoundCloud 2. I'm Todd Gleason.